Our final speaker this morning is Ellie Stout, the Prevention Support Program Manager at the Suicide Prevention Resource Center, which does have a lot of resources on faith-based approaches to suicide prevention, some of which were on the table in the back. I'm not sure if they're still there. Ellie has a Master's of Science in Health Communication from a fine institution here in Boston. She has worked nationally and internationally in public health, and she serves as an expert on safe and effective communication for suicide prevention, including consulting on campaigns around the country. Welcome, Ellie Stout.
Although I need to brush my mouth. This works out really nicely, actually, because Alex set the stage of sort of suicide nationally. Then we heard about a few different things that people are doing or that might be done in specific settings. And now I'm going to talk about how those things can be potentially continued after the big grant funding goes away. So I have no financial relationships to disclose. And I'm going to be talking about sustainability among suicide prevention grantees. I'm going to jump right in. Before I dive in, I did want to tell you a little bit about SPRC just to make sure that you knew what we do. We provide a lot of different services, technical assistance, training, resources, support, to national, state, and community groups around the country. We're funded by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, and we're housed within EDC, which is a local nonprofit here in the Boston area. We have a booth at the exhibit hall that I hope you'll visit, or visit our website at sprc.org. And the project I'm going to talk about relates to the experiences of grantees funded under the Garrett Lee Smith Memorial Act. So I wanted to share a bit more with you about that program, although we've already heard from one of the grantees. The act was signed in 2004, and it authorizes SAMHSA to fund state, tribal, and campus suicide prevention grants. Every grant is for a three-year period. And since the first grants were funded in 2005, there have been over 325 grants awarded to over 250 sites. And one of SPRC's roles, or specifically the team that I lead, is to provide technical assistance and support to those grantees to help them develop, implement, and evaluate suicide prevention programs. And as you can see, we have about 150 grantees around the country right now. So this past year, SAMHSA asked us to reach out to alumni grantees, that's what we call grantees whose funding has ended, to find out what suicide prevention infrastructure and activities they had been able to sustain past grant funding and how they were able to sustain those efforts. And then they asked us to develop some recommendations, not just for current or future grantees, but also for the field in general. So this was our approach to the project. I'm going to go through each of these steps in a bit more depth. But before I do have some quotes and some graphs. And maybe those of you sitting very back might not be able to see them. And I'm going to go pretty quickly. So I wanted to mention that all of this information is included in the report, which is available on our website. And I'll tell you how to get there at the end of the presentation. So first, we looked at the sustainability literature. And when we did that, we found that the research on sustainability is still largely in its infancy. And perhaps this is partly due to the fact that sustainability is a pretty complex concept to define and measure. So while everyone seems to agree that sustaining activities and infrastructure is very important, there's not much agreement on a common definition or a common conceptual model for sustainability. So the literature review informed the second phase of the project, which was to survey alumni grantees themselves. And the survey looked at what infrastructure and activities grantees were able to sustain past their Garrett Lee Smith funding. We asked respondents to gauge the level of activity in a number of areas at three different points of time: 1 year before grant funding started, during the peak of grant funding, and then 1 year after all funding, including no-cost extensions, had ended. And we circulated the survey to all Garrett Lee Smith alumni grantees that were at least 1 year past all funding. And the overall response rate was about 50%. So that's 25 of 53 campus alumni sites. 8 of the 11 state sites and 3 of the 4 tribal sites that met the inclusion criteria. So what did we find from the survey? Well, first, we were happy to find that every site who responded reported at least some suicide prevention activity 1 year after all funding ended. And the bulk of those, about 85%, reported high or moderate levels of activity. And this chart here shows that obviously, the overall level of activity across all sites increased from the year before funding to the peak of funding. Then it did decline at 1 year after Garrett Lee Smith, but importantly, that decline still left them above the level of pre-grant activity. So the funding, activity level was still significantly higher than it had been before they received the grant. We also took 11 key factors that had been identified in the literature review and asked sites to rank how important each one had been to their ability to sustain suicide prevention efforts. And respondents actually ranked all 11 key factors pretty highly, but these were the top areas. So consistent and qualified leadership and staff, support from key decision makers like administrators or tribal council members, and funding or financial support. And in fact, funding post Garrett Lee Smith grant period was the key factor associated with sustained capacity and overall suicide prevention activity. So this figure shows the close association between funding, which is the greenish line on the bottom, activity, which is the red line, and capacity, which is the blue line. So you can see all three start low before GLS funding. They increase during during Garrett Lee Smith grant, and then decrease slightly after Garrett Lee Smith. And of course, this correlational doesn't necessarily prove that the funding caused the activity, but it does show that the amount of funding sites obtained after losing their Garrett Lee Smith funding was closely associated with sustained suicide prevention efforts. So the third project stage, we selected sites to interview from among the survey respondents who gave us permission to contact them. We developed a sustainability scale to rank the survey responses and identified the programs who were most sustained 1 year after funding. So that was a total of 15 sites, and actually 13 of them were selected based on their sustainability score, and then only one of those was a tribal site, so we decided to include the other two tribal sites that had been that had responded to the survey, and they conducted phone interviews with those sites. So it was 9 campuses, 3 states, and 3 tribes. There were 2 overarching themes that came out of the interviews. First, everyone had a different path to sustainability, so everybody used a combination of strategies, but what they ended up finding that worked was very specific to their unique situation and circumstances. And the other thing that came up consistently across every site we interviewed was the importance of funding, and I'll get into that in just a moment. And in addition to those interview findings that applied to every single site we interviewed, there were also some themes that applied to multiple sites, and we pulled those out and added them to the findings to develop these 5 recommendations, and I'm going to go into these in a bit more detail one by one. So first, we recommend adopting a sustainability mindset. And by this I mean that suicide prevention leaders and groups should establish a vision of what they want to have in place when the grant ends, and should keep this in mind from the very initial program design through implementation, and whenever they hit a barrier or things don't go as planned or new opportunity arrives, keep that vision in mind as they continue throughout the funding period. The second recommendation is to catalyze momentum for suicide prevention efforts in the setting or community where the program is being implemented. And so that means engaging a variety of stakeholders and influencers that represent different community groups to build strong support for suicide prevention efforts across the community and to involve the community in those program efforts. Third, we recommend fostering strong leadership. Programs should deliberately select or cultivate a strong leader to spearhead suicide prevention efforts. And of course, our interviews ended up being with the leaders who had helped to sustain those efforts. And we noted a number of skills that helped their program survive and thrive, things like good project management skills, development and grant writing skills, communications, community organizing, strategic planning, and so on. So you would want to hire someone who already has some of those skills in place or work to build those skills in the person who's already in charge. Fourth, we recommend cultivating partnerships and nurturing those relationships with partners so that they become joint stakeholders and really have a vested interest in the success and continuation of suicide prevention efforts. And this included, when we talked with folks we interviewed, engaging diverse partners that you maybe wouldn't think of at first for suicide prevention, including the faith community, for instance, or local businesses, so that you have a broad network, but also to be sure you have a clear purpose and vision for those partners or for your coalition or advisory group. And finally, funding. We recommend planning how to secure additional funding or other sort of in-kind resources or support to sustain suicide prevention efforts. And as they look for support, we recommend that programs should especially prioritize securing funding for program leadership or at least someone to be coordinating suicide prevention activities. Be sort of a hub for those activities. And this quote, I think, really illustrates well another important nuance to this recommendation, which is that many programs didn't need as much funding after the grant ended as they did to sort of build the infrastructure. So once they had built it, it didn't cost as much to sustain it. We did have some limitations to this project. Most noticeably, we had a smaller sample size. And that might have implications for generalizability. And it's also possible that the folks who responded to the survey were more likely to have sustained something than those who did not respond. So as I said, all of this and much, much more is summarized in a report that's available on our website. The easiest way to find it is to search for Leaving a Legacy. And there's some postcards in the back that have the information as well. We're currently disseminating it through our listservs and partner lists and at conferences like this one. This year we'll be developing a hands-on version that's much shorter. This is like 100 pages. We'll do a two-pager for people in the field to really focus on the recommendations and action steps that they can take to ensure sustainability from the start. We'd love to publish the findings, but also we would love to do a follow-up study because in the meantime, there's a whole bunch more grantees who have become alumni, and we'd like to see, you know, over time, whether these findings would be replicated. I want to very importantly acknowledge Colleen Carr. Wave your hand, Colleen. She actually managed this project, did all the day-to-day work, wrote the report, and Zoe Baptista, also from SPRC, who's not here today, did a huge amount of the interviews and lots of work on this. Scott Formica and Robert Apsler, who are from Social Sciences Research and Evaluation, a local evaluation company, did all the survey design and analysis for us. We had many internal and external reviewers for the report, and of course, the alumni respondents took a lot of time to give us their feedback, and not on here, but I really should have put it. It's great that SAMHSA asked us to do this, and it shows really their interest in seeing what their investment is achieving over the long run.
Wait, don't go anywhere. Questions for Ellie?
Yeah. Well, for this project, we were interested in how people had sustained their efforts, so we didn't really have the scope to investigate why those sites may not have. I think in cases where programs weren't sustained, we may not have had the right contact anymore. People may have moved on. You know, the first grants ended in 2008, so there had some time had passed. So we did the best to get the right contact information, but we really didn't have the resources to do that follow-up.
Well, then, the future grant may make it a condition of awarding the grant that there will be follow-up.
Well, that's
interesting. You mean like that they would be sure that they could keep us up to date on who the contact is and the site for suicide? That would be nice. We should both recommend that to SAMHSA. We have no power over that. Any other questions? Yeah. It was quite variable, and Colleen will correct me. I think there were a couple of sites that just ended up having like a big state grant or federal grant fall into their laps right after Garrett Lee Smith. There were other folks who, there was one project director I know who taught herself how to write grants and wrote a bunch of smaller grants. In some cases, people were able to get partners or other departments in the college, for instance, to take on some of the functions, so it's sort of more building it into the existing infrastructure. I don't know if you would add any other kinds of...
Yeah, for the school partnership, they generate that momentum that actually gets the line item in their budget.
Oh, right.
But when it's just a one-time grant that they're now continuing to fund, just as another example.
Yeah, so it varies. One more question.
Do you think you've learned enough about the sustainability experiences to be able to predict who's going to be sustainable and therefore select them for funding at the outcome?
Well, we don't select people for funding. That's done by SAMHSA. But actually, SAMHSA does have, as part of the application, a section on, you know, how will you sustain your efforts. That doesn't necessarily mean that maybe the person who wrote the grant had great ideas, but the person implementing the grant might not necessarily have a sustainability mindset. So in some ways, it's hard to predict. But we did talk a bit with SAMHSA about the results and recommended maybe that should be weighted a little more heavily, because I've actually seen funded grantees who wrote, yeah, we probably won't be able to continue it past the grant. Just one example. Probably most of them did a better job, and you know, there's other important aspects to the scoring. That's a good question.